I invite you to stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, for which it stands, one nation under God, for all.
Please call the roll.
Mr. McDavid?
Here.
Mr. Ruffin?
Here.
Mr. Trapp? Mr. Scala?
Here.
Mr. Thomas? Ms. Nauzer?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
We have minutes from the regular council meeting of May 18th, 2015. Are there any corrections?
Mr. Mayor, could I pull number Bill 119-15 from
Let's do the minutes
first.
Then we'll do the agenda second later.
Jump the gun here.
Are there any corrections to the minutes? If not, may I have a motion and second for approval?
So moved.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Are there any corrections to the agenda?
Yeah, my apologies. Could I remove Bill 119-15 from the consent agenda and put it in the appropriate place for discussion?
What's that?
Where would they go?
15.
Which issue is that?
East Walnut issue. There's an East Walnut issue on the consent agenda.
The Learning Center?
Yeah.
That'll go under old business.
We'll move that to old business, 119.
Mr. Mayor, I need to abstain from R87-15 on the consent agenda due to a conflict of interest.
I'll move to allow you to abstain. Is there a second?
And second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Any other corrections to the agenda?
I'd like to recommend that we remove R97-15 from the consent agenda and place it in an appropriate place for discussion.
That would go under new business.
Goes where?
New business.
Which one is it?
It's the
R9715.
R9715?
Yes.
Into new business. Are there any other corrections to the agenda? May I have a motion and a second to approve the agenda as corrected?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Welcome. We have opportunities for public comment during the meeting. During the public hearings, old business, new business. At the end of the meeting, there is an open comment section where anybody can speak for 3 minutes about anything. Each individual is entitled to 3 minutes. There's a clock right in front of the dais. I ask you to respect that timer. If you represent an organization primarily and directly impacted by the item, you may ask for and will receive 5 minutes. I'm going to appoint the Mayor's Task Force on Pedestrian Safety. The task force will be co-chaired by Ward 1 Councilmember Clyde Ruffin and Ward 4 Councilmember Ian Thomas. They will be non-voting members. The following city commissions will have representatives: the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission, Rachel Rulin; the Public Transit Advisory Commission, Stephen Hansen; the Disabilities Commission, Don Zitterberg; Parks and Recreation Commission, Maren Blevins. Community stakeholders will involve the following: University of Missouri, Frank Schmidt; Missouri Students Association, Sayed Ejaz; Columbia Public Schools, John White; Missouri Department of Transportation, James Beatty; Downtown Community Improvement District, Katie Essing; Services for Independent Living, Tech Chapman; Phoenix Programs, Kyle Riley; FedNet Coalition, Lawrence Simonson; Neighborhood Representative, Nate Brown; Healthcare Professional, Michael Sevchek; Injury Prevention Specialist, Leanne Johnson; City Staff Liaison, as a non-voting member, will be Community Development Official Mitch Scove. Those who have contacted the city manager's office by noon on Wednesday prior to council meeting can speak at the beginning of the meeting on any topic not on the agenda. Only two people can speak on the same topic. Tonight I will yield 5 minutes to Richard Winkle and/or Carolyn Matthews.
Thank you very much. I'm Carolyn Matthews, and I am on the board of the Columbia People's Visioning. And I already handed out, I hope you got the handouts. So, Fast Track Authority and the TPP, what are they and how will they impact you? Fast Track via Trade Promotion Authority, or TPA, will give away Congress's traditional congressional authority for trade to the administrative branch with some guidelines. Fast Track will make it more likely to pass legislation the public would oppose due to trade language that has been classified without transparency. If we knew what was actually in it, we would see it would not likely pass. There is no opportunity to amend, making it more likely Congress can pass bad things rather than not passing anything. Elected officials say this is necessary to get trade and other bills passed, such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the well-known TPP, and the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or the TTIP, and others. Where there is no concern, Fast Track wouldn't be necessary. However, there is significant, tremendous concern over the information, such as from many leaked documents via WikiLeaks, the TPP language, classified, secretly written by more than 500 national and international megacorporations, preventing our own elected officials from discussing any of it with the public. What do we know from these leaks? We should be thankful for they came to us. Says a lot and is alarming and promotes significant and growing backlash. These leaks indicate scenarios that could impact us locally, right here. Our renewable energy standard, RES, would be up for lawsuit risks via the Investor State Dispute Settlement, ISDS, I'll be referring to that, tribunals out of the NAFTA tradition and WTO, World Trade Organization. These could affect the Columbia's public health smoking ban and other public health and food issues, such as affecting organic and smaller farms that could be harmed, such as the right to farm, the sweeping state constitutional amendment that we saw how that could, quote unquote, forever guarantee farming methods in spite of some of these methods damaging neighboring farms, organic options, and harming small farmers unable to afford lawsuits challenging their damages. The public is also harmed with no recourse to air, water, food, and soil damages impacting the broader environment and health of our water, air, food supplies, and local small farming companies and economies, as big agribusiness operations often send their profits out of local and regional economies. So this would definitely affect our local areas. WTO examples impacting public health and choice include country of origin, food safety, standards and labeling, as well as tariffs in many industries being annihilated or effectively circumvented by suing taxpayers through this ISDS, I can't emphasize that enough, these tribunals, for expected loss of profit. Expected, meaning corporations are going to run these things and to their benefit. The corporations write these trade agreements, and they are already challenging local, state, regional, and national regulations, hindering presumed profits. So if they can prove any kind of loss of profit, they can act like a nation and sue other entities such as localities and states. Label laws can be shot down by WTO ISDS tribunals, so local agricultural goods cannot be marketed for special advantages on our shelves, such as the May 2015 rulings below, which you can read on farther down. Buy American or local laws challenged can be dampening jobs and local American economic growth. Banking regulations are being challenged by these same ISDS tribunals, suing governments and taxpayers for expected future profit loss. Lack of banking and governmental oversight and looser regulation, which was a big problem in 2008, is what brought down the economy from which many are still recovering, including Columbians, Boone Countyans, and more. And our community is still paying for that. A bank in Czech Republic, a bank successfully sued through the ISDS to the small Czech Republic for not bailing the bank out and protecting their investment, and they were awarded $236 million. Net neutrality and internet access can be affected through everyone having the same or similar neutral lower-cost access can be skirted around through a runaround with this ISDS to sue the public for presumed profits lost due to public fairness regulations like net neutrality, recently fought and won for a business built with our public funds. Public schools, universities, governments, rural areas, small businesses would all be affected and would have to pay for more unequal access to internet services that are vital today. NAFTA, in the destruction of jobs and outsourcing that we have seen extensively, The TPP is called NAFTA on steroids. It's much stronger. Expands the covering 40% of global GDP, expanding ISDS tribunals, more jobs outsourced to the cheapest labor in a race to the bottom with little or no human, environmental, or other standards. Environmental standards are touted to be improved.
Ms. Matthews, your time has expired.
Can I finish the sentence?
She can finish that sentence.
Yeah, just that the environmental standards that are touted to be improved in actuality would have no enforcement and no way to be improved. They would actually be a race to the bottom. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please take action.
Council does not address any issues brought up during scheduled public comment, but we may discuss these at the end of the meeting during an open council comment section. We'll move to public hearings. Please read item A.
Agenda item A is the construction of traffic calming speed tables along a portion of College Park Drive between Stadium Boulevard and Russell Boulevard.
Staff?
College Park Drive scored the second highest priority project within the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program with a score of 87 out of 100. The scoring system takes a number of factors into consideration, including speed, volume, pedestrian generators in the area, proximity to schools, bike routes, and recent accident history. Although the speed limit is set at 25 miles per hour, the average speed is 46 miles per hour with over 1,200 vehicles traveling on it per day. Two IP meetings were held, one in January and the other in February of this year, discussing three options with speed tables, speed humps, and bulb outs. The majority of the attendees favor in the concept of the speed tables. The estimated cost for installation of the three speed tables is $24,000 and would be paid from the Street Division's traffic safety account. Construction is expected either late 2015 or early 2016. Be happy to answer any questions.
Council, any questions?
Just one question. We at the last council meeting, I believe, we discussed CIP proposals and things that were placeholders on the list and so on, and traffic calming is part of that. This predates that?
This was in the works.
This is already in the works.
Yeah, we've had IPs January, February, earlier this year using the matrix that we brought to you.
Right, so this is all within the budget and it's already been in the works for a long time. Yeah.
Any other questions? I'll open the public hearing. Would anyone like to speak? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. Any council comments? May I have a motion to proceed with construction and of this project?
So moved. So moved.
A second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. Passes 5-0. Item B, please read item B.
Agenda item B is the design and construction of a stormwater quality feature, construction of a sidewalk along a portion of the south side of Nifong Boulevard between the proposed Aura Drive and Bethel Road, construction of sidewalks along both sides of the proposed Aura Drive, and the design of a new east-west connector roadway from Peachtree Drive to the proposed Aura Drive.
Staff, please.
Yeah, in 2011, the city entered into a development agreement with Jeffrey Smith Investment Company involving a new development at the southeast corner of Nifong Boulevard and Bethel Street. The agreement specifies that the city is responsible for the design of a new east-west connector roadway between Peachtree Drive to the proposed Aurora Drive and a water quality feature. Additionally, the city is responsible for the construction of the stormwater quality feature and sidewalks. Originally, a stormwater detention basin was planned, but is no longer viable due to shallow rock depth. Instead, more emphasis will be placed on the water quality aspect. The goals include improving connectivity and traffic flow through the area and improving the water quality within the watershed. The original estimate for the design services and construction of the stormwater system was $800,000. However, staff now believes the cost being much lower due to the stormwater detention basin being eliminated. The estimated cost for sidewalks along Nifong and Aurora Drive is $75,700. The developer is responsible for the construction of a proposed east-west roadway to the proposed north-south roadway, which is Aurora Drive, two roundabouts, and a traffic signal at Nifong and Aurora Drive. Be happy to answer your questions.
Do we know how much the developer's having to pay for those streets?
I do not know.
Right.
The developer's paying for all of the road improvements? The two roundabouts?
That's correct.
So that's why we negotiated, we put in the sidewalk?
I guess I'm a little confused. I mean, the initial, you said in the report the initial cost was estimated to cost $800,000.
For the stormwater basin.
Yeah.
And now
it's much less than that, but there is
less.
No number. I mean, we
haven't had the engineering just yet to figure out what kind of
like
water
much
quality.
Less half that? Or
I would
less
say
than
half that, because it was going to require quite a bit of earth movement, and we cannot do that because of the rock shelf that was found.
And so where are the plans for any future sidewalks? Because this is just going to have sidewalks on Aurora. And the city will be putting in this substation there, so I'm assuming we'll have to put sidewalks in on our property when that's developed. But there's no plans along Peachtree Drive for any sidewalks in the near future, is there?
On Peachtree?
Just because, I mean, that's just a heavily traveled.
No, we are adding sidewalks along, sidewalks along Nifong. And then all the sidewalks around the improvements that the developer's building on the roads.
So we'll have sidewalks along both those roundabouts?
Yes.
Okay.
The developer will be paying for those sidewalks.
The city's portion is the sidewalk cost. The developer's building the road.
Okay.
But there's no plans to extend the sidewalk up Peachtree Drive towards Nifong?
Not with this development agreement.
Okay.
It's something we can look at.
It's kind of, because that's the most heavily foot traffic areas along the break time in that. But, I mean, that's a future conversation for another day, but I just want to make sure we're not putting sidewalks. It'll just be on the new improvement.
That's correct.
Any other questions?
Yeah, it says that there's a design of a new east-west connector roadway from Peachtree Drive to the proposed Aurora Drive.
Yeah, we haven't named that street just yet.
Where does that go?
It's between the two roundabouts. It's on the...
Thank you. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Hello, my name is Kurt Merching. I'm representing Shakespeare's Pizza. We've got a lot invested in this, obviously. First, I want to find out, there were three concepts that were presented to us, and I believe tonight the council is to choose one of those concepts. Is that correct?
That's correct. We're proposing option B, which is on the screen here.
It's condition concept. You're proposing option.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Concept one
is the recommended one, right?
One, I'm sorry.
Okay. We'd like to encourage you to adopt that concept, to embrace it and choose it. The design team had a lot of really good reasons, and I won't repeat those, but we've got a couple of good reasons that we want to emphasize. One is that the other concepts, two and three, are going to require purchasing an easement from property that Shakespeare's Pizza owns. A little corner of our lot is going to be taken away. The public needs property, easements happen, that's fine. But that piece of property, right now, we've got ideas about developing it. It's just the right size to put in a small real estate office or a dentist office or something and have enough parking for that building. If that easement comes through and a chunk of that lot is chopped off, it'll be reduced in size and it won't be in that sweet spot that developers refer to that'll be just right for a nice little building. So it will have a major impact on our ability to build something on that lot, which is something we want to do. It's our own selfish personal reasons, but they're very good ones, and it'll make a big difference to us. The other reason I'd like to encourage you to go with concept one, traffic calming is something that really needs to happen out there. I sit in my office window and look at Peachtree Drive, and bless their little hearts, when those boys get out of Rockridge High School every afternoon, they go blasting up Peachtree Drive. It's one big swooping curve, and I've seen cars going 40, sometimes perhaps 50 miles an hour every now and then. So traffic calming is something that really needs to happen. Concept one addresses that the best. The traffic circles, the rotaries, roundabouts move a lot of traffic, but they really calm it down. So for those two reasons and everything else the design team said were good reasons for concept one, I'd like you to embrace concept one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll go to council comments. Anyone?
I'll make a comment. I think this is definitely something that is needed for this area. As we just heard, the high school traffic along this roadway at times can be very treacherous and dangerous. And Nifong is certainly a roadway that is growing in traffic volumes, and it's becoming more and more dangerous, especially with people trying to pull into the break time and some of those retail businesses over here off of Peachtree Drive. People take their life in their hand when they're trying to exit, which prompted me to think of another question. Will there be limited access off of Peachtree Drive once that traffic signal is installed at Aurora? Will there be just a right-in, right-out? Or will people still be able to try and cut across and make a left-hand turn out of there?
We haven't studied that yet, but I would venture to say people are going to go to the signal when they want to go west.
Okay. Because I know that's one of the areas that are very dangerous with people trying. And then you've got pedestrians trying to walk across there as well as people are trying to take their life in their hand and merge into that traffic. So I fully support this, and I thank staff for having the interested party meeting and listening to the concerns and issues of the people of the Fifth Ward.
Yeah, I'm very sympathetic to not taking right away if we don't need to take it, if there are better solutions. And Mr. Mershing is obviously, he's a great pizza guy, and I appreciate that. And he commented also on traffic flow, and I tend to agree with him. I'm becoming quite a fan of some of the roundabouts and how they're working in this community. Some of them are now even getting to be a little bit too small. We may have to upsize them, but nonetheless.
Fairview.
Yeah. In the first one that was over, you know, over on next to I-70 and so on, that one is starting to be packed. But they are starting to work very well, and I think people are getting used to them. And I think it certainly is a step forward. So, I'm very supportive of this whole concept, and as long as we can minimize the impact that we have on local businesses, that's a good thing as well. So,
anyone else? May I have a motion to direct staff to proceed with plans and specifications for the Peachtree Connector and Water Quality Feature Project?
So moved.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Item C and B 125-15.
Agenda item C is the realignment and reconstruction of a portion of Rangeline Road as it relates to runway 1331, improvements and relocation of the runway safety area at the Columbia Regional Airport. Council Bill 12515 is an ordinance determining it is in the public interest to realign and reconstruct a portion of Rangeline Road as it relates to runway 1331, improvements and the relocation of the runway safety area at the Columbia Regional Airport, approving and adopting plans and specifications, determining that the work shall be done by contract, calling for bids through the purchasing division, providing for payment for the improvement, appropriating funds, authorizing the city manager to obtain, execute, and record all documents necessary for the improvement, providing for compliance with the prevailing wage law and state-mandated construction safety training, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff?
Just to get everybody's bearings on the photograph, the terminal sets right here. This is runway 220. Our main runway, this is 1331, what we call our crosswinds runway. 220 in the future will be extended this direction, and so we're trying to correct some incursion problems here and here. And what's on tonight is this roadway red. This is Rangeline Road. It currently goes right through there. We're going to be working in this area and also extending the crosswind 1331 this direction. So what we're having to do, this is the existing roadway, is to move this roadway out away from the end of the runway for safety problems, for safety issues. And so the project is estimated to cost about $1.5 million. 90% of it will be reimbursed through the Federal Aviation Administration, and the city will be responsible for 10% local match, or about $158,000, that will be paid for from transportation sales tax funds. Be happy to answer any questions council may have.
Just one question. I obviously, for safety reasons, this should be moved. Is there a lifetime expectancy of this? I mean, we're upgrading certain issues at the airport and so on. So this is not. We're not just doing this for the next. Is there a window? Is this for the next 20 years, or do we know what?
Well, we never know when.
Sure.
The Airport Association or Federal FAA will change the rules on us. One of the reasons we're having to do some of this is the crossing right here of 220 with 1331 is not up to today's standards.
Yeah, right.
And so we have to address those standards anytime we spend money on the runway, and
but
so that's the first thing.
But this is contingent on the extension of that crosswind thing north.
But that also has to do with when you're at the midpoint of 220 and the midpoint of 1331, you're actually looking through a hangar, which is a rule that you can't do anymore. So that's why we're extending 1331 this direction to move that midpoint to where you're not looking through a hangar.
But that midpoint extension is anticipated to take care of the next so many years.
Oh, yes. It'll last, you know, as long as the airport's in existence.
And where are those extensions supposed to? Sorry.
We're doing a portion of this. It's already, you had a public hearing, and we're moving forward with that this year. And so we're getting started. The roadway will be done again this year, correct?
Yeah.
And so this is just a public hearing. We'll be moving forward with it this summer as well.
It's all on our property, too.
Yeah. No right-of-way is needed.
I so much want to ask if there'll be any mud at the intersections, but I won't.
Let
me ask you this. This crosswind runway will be 6,500 feet?
Yes,
It says 5,500.
It's 5,500 currently. We'll be extending it to the east. I believe it's about 1,000 feet.
So it'll be the same length as the current main runway is?
While we're working on 220, yes.
Okay. Got it. Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Seeing none, any council comments? Please call the roll on 125-15.
Council Bill 125-15, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
We'll go to old business, 119-15.
Council Bill 119-15 is an ordinance changing the uses allowed on OP zone property located on the north side of Walnut Street and east of Calvin Drive, 2311 East Walnut Street, approving a revised statement of intent, repealing all conflicting ordinances or parts of ordinances, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
This is an amendment of an ordinance that had rezoned the property at the intersection of Walnut and Divot Drive to OP, or planned business. The owner of that property wants to lease the premises to a language immersion school called Language Tree, and the staff found that the permitted uses list in that OP zoning did not accommodate that use, and so that list has been amended, so council action tonight would simply take an existing ordinance and add one zoning term to that ordinance to allow the language school. The issue was that it's really a preschool age or preschool and early traditional school age institution, and that wasn't covered by the previous list of permitted uses. So this is allowing it to operate. The statistics that have been presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission are that the school is licensed for 50 children. They intend to operate it with 36 and would give instruction out of this building. It was the building that had been used as the Park Services Center before it was rezoned.
Yeah, I just had a question. I asked to take this off the consent agenda because I can remember the controversy behind this building. It was Coil Construction, I think, was the owner of this property and leased to the city and so on. 2009, I believe, Laura, you were here at that time, and so was Barbara, and I was as well. And I remember it was a recommendation of the city staff to not only adopt the statement of intent with the necessary uses, but also provide some guidance in the ordinance itself to make sure that there are protections, that this would not go beyond the kind of uses that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And all I want to make sure is that this additional use, which I'm not opposed to, although it's a sensitive area in terms of the amount of traffic and so on, and I even suggested at one point at the last council session for a potential CIP roundabout at East Walnut and 63, which didn't fly because it was very expensive and probably not well advised, but nonetheless, there is a traffic issue here with this unimproved road on the north side of Stevens Park. So I wanted to make sure that we weren't jeopardizing the ordinance that was in place not to expand this beyond just this single use that we're talking about in order to allow this to happen, because there was also significant controversy in the neighborhood about what might happen to this property if there were not sufficient protections. So
the ordinance that we have today allows private schools, but the way it reads, it says private schools with curriculum equivalent to that of a public elementary or high school and institutions of higher learning, including gymnasiums, stadiums, and dormitories if located on campus. That's a mouthful, and not all of that would go into a single building with a single parking lot like this. But this is really an equivalent use. It's just that the you read that language when it says equivalent to that of a public elementary. We thought the age range was outside of that.
Right.
So it's really just making that particular term more flexible by adding the term family daycare homes.
I have no quibble with that. I'm just wondering whether or not any of the original ordinance that was, the statement of intent that applied to the ordinance is being changed with just this additional use. Is the ordinance itself being changed?
It's just to change the uses that are maybe accommodated.
Just this single use is the only addition.
Right, right. It's not.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question.
Yeah, to be clear, what you need to understand is that you're adding a category of uses, not just this one particular use.
But you're not.
So the category of uses is family daycare homes, daycare centers, preschool centers, nursery schools, child play centers, child education centers, child experiment stations, or child development institutions. That is the category that you're adding.
But you're not changing any of what was established in 2009 beyond adding this additional category.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it from an impact standpoint, I mean, these things are really the same. It's just that they were overlooked because there was probably no one conceived of a preschool-type institution going in there.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions by council? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Christensen, and I'm the director of the Language Tree Immersion School. Can I please have 5 minutes?
Okay.
Yeah. We are a language immersion school. We teach children ages 2 through 6 for 3 hours at a time, French and Spanish. We ask to be add this suggested use, and I know that traffic has been a concern. However, at any given point between the hours of 9 a.m. to noon and then 1 to 4, the maximum numbers of cars for our school will be 15 at any one point dropping off or picking up. So I believe planning and zoning determined that wasn't a large enough impact to be a detriment to the surrounding neighborhood. So I ask you that you please vote in our favor. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any council comments?
Yeah, I have a question. It says in this ordinance, we're changing the uses allowed on OP zone property, approving a revised statement of intent and repealing all conflicting ordinances or parts of ordinances. So I thought, was it 2009? That there was an ordinance that specifically, I mean, what are we repealing?
I think that's really a boilerplate statement, is it not?
What you're repealing is the prior statement of intent. So this statement of intent replaces the prior one. And the difference, as explained by Mr. Teddy, is that the only difference between this statement of intent and the old one is that addition of family daycare homes, daycare centers.
Okay, so there won't be any fire stations or there's nothing else in there?
Okay. Public police and fire stations are allowed under this particular statement of intent, but they are not a new addition to the statement of intent that was in the prior one as well.
Okay.
So all of the things that are listed, the way our zoning code works, when you have a planned development, the developer creates a list of acceptable uses, and then anything that falls within that category, the property can be utilized for. It's not just for this, as was described for the Learning Center, it's not just a single one-time conditional use that's granted for that specific use. We have these categories of uses, and then anything that falls within those is appropriate in a planned development.
But nothing has changed except for the addition of this
additional use category.
Right.
That category that I read. Now, there could be, it could be certainly broader than what's being described by the applicant. based upon what that addition is, because it's not specific to this particular user. It is categorically whether or not you believe that type of use is appropriate for a planned unit development at this location.
Any other comments, questions? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 119-15, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nowzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
129.
Council Bill 129-15 is an ordinance appropriating funds for Water and Light Department home performance with Energy Star and photovoltaic rebate programs and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
Well, I'll start by giving just a brief history on this. Back in 2013, Water and Light staff worked with the Water and Light Advisory Board to conduct our electric integrated resource plan, and then we also put together a staff implementation plan as a result of that effort. In there, one of the action items was that we would do a customer outreach program where we would basically go out to the customers and try to communicate with the customers and get more activity in our energy efficiency programs. So in 2014, we brought a bill request to actually fund two positions to actually conduct this outreach and allocate a little bit of money into the programs that we saw would probably see increased activity from this. I'm happy to report that we have seen increased activity in our energy efficiency programs. So here we are now before the end of the budget year, and we're looking that we will expend the money out of our energy efficiency programs. So the first item on here is to appropriate $300,000 in our energy efficiency programs, so they will make it to the end of the year. And the other item is $80,000 that's going to be appropriated into our photovoltaic program, because we have seen an increase in that also. So with that, to answer any questions about the appropriation request.
I assume that the rebate for solar power is included under the 3% cap.
It has been put as far as a cost. So if you look at the categories in our renewable energy, you will see a photovoltaic column in there. It's very small at this time because obviously there's not very much.
But it could grow dramatically.
It could grow.
And
this, it takes off
this
that
is
way.
Then incorporated in the amount of money that goes into that cap limit.
It is. And we actually had we finished with a consultant that came through and looked at all the benefits renewable of all the resources. And so our current plan has been vetted through the board and a consultant that came in and took account to all the resources that play into this.
All right, thank you. Any other questions by council? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Monta Welch, 2808 Greenbrier Drive, speaking on behalf of People's Visioning, Columbia Climate Change Coalition, and a whole host of other organizations and folks in the community.
Set it for 3 minutes, please.
Okay. And thank you. Just wanted to say appreciate the work in the direction towards renewable energy and our mixed use of energy sources. And so we just wanted to basically say thank you very much and keep up the good work and let's keep rolling. Thank you.
Thank you. Put it in the bank. Anyone else?
Credit.
Close the public hearing. Council comments?
Just a brief comment. I mean, anything I can do to encourage the aggressive use of renewable energy, I will do within the context of the cap that we've established that the folks have voted on. I might even be in favor of bringing that issue back to the folks. But nonetheless, I think this is money well spent, and I think that's the direction we're going in. The diversification of the utility in general, I think, is a positive thing and a very empowering thing, if you excuse the pun. But I think we're headed in the right direction, and I will support anything that helps us get to that goal.
Anyone else? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 129-15, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nowzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Please read the consent agenda bills.
Items on the consent agenda include bills 116-15, 117-15, 118-15, 120-15, 121-15, 122-15, 123-15, 124-15, 126-15, 127-15, 128-15, 130-15, 131-15, 132-15, 133-15, 134-15, 135-15, and resolutions 86-15, 87-15, 88-15, 89-15, 90-15, 91-15, 92-15, 93-15, 94-15, 95-15, and 96-15.
Call the roll, please.
Bills 116-15, 117-15, 118-15, 120-15, 121-15, 122-15, 123-15, 124-15, 126-15, 127-15, 128-15, 130-15, 131-15, 132-15, 133-15, 134-15, 135-15, and resolutions 86-15, 87-15, 88-15, 89-15, 90-15, 91-15, 92-15, 93-15, 94-15, 95-15, and 96-15. Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes, on all bills and resolutions except the resolution 87-15, which I must abstain.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Under new business, please read R 97-15.
Council Bill R-9715 is a resolution authorizing a bus advertising services agreement with Transit Advertising Incorporated.
Staff, please.
Due to the expiration of the five-year contract with Transit Advertising, the purchasing division conducted a competitive bid process in December of 2014 for the bus advertising service. Transit Advertising, Inc. was the only respondent, and staff proposes they received the award of the new contract. The only significant change to the scope of the contract in that the future advertising should cover no more than 50% of the passenger windows of any bus. I'd be happy to answer any questions council may have.
How much does it cover now?
You're allowed to cover it all. I mean, you can see through it, but you can't see into it. You can see out of it.
Okay, so this
and we had some, we had some comments that it didn't look like a bus, our city bus, and so we wanted to kind of rectify that.
Just a question. I mean, we've had some chatter about this, about, I mean, some people are in favor of advertising dollars, and we obviously need advertising dollars to fund the transit system because we're operating at a deficit, essentially, except with public subsidies. But I guess the question I'm asking is where does this money go? Where does the money from the advertising dollars, does that just go into the operating budget of the
right.
So it just automatically goes into the operating budget of the transit system, right?
Right.
But there's no special categories for advertising revenues for any particular
thing. It may show up on a line item in the budget. I don't recall how it actually looks, but it goes into the operating side.
So this is last year's $183,000 we got from
We haven't finished last year or this year as they were proposing something
right,
else.
Right. But so that represents, trying to do some quick math, out of a $6 or $7 million budget, about 3% of the budget.
So yeah, we get 60% of that. So
pardon me?
We get 60% of that.
So it's a small part of the budget. I guess transit is.
I need every dollar.
I know. It's just there's just
kind of side of the airport.
Of course, we do allow it on the private shuttles too, don't we? They're heavily advertised too. So don't have any sign ordinance for mobile vehicles of any kind, obviously.
Correct.
Well, and if we're going to try and limit advertising on buses, then I would say that we shouldn't allow advertising at bus shelters either.
Well, we talked about that too.
We're trying to get the private sector to go into a public-private partnership and help support and fund our bus shelters. And I'll remind everyone, I know this is not time for public or council comment, but there was a lot of pushback for years. But then when the recession hit and gas prices soared, this certainly made a tremendous impact on us being allowed to keep our buses running and pay for gas when it was upwards of $4 or more a gallon. So, as Mr. Glasscock says, every dollar helps, and I don't find it so intrusive.
I hate to bring this up because I'm was I think the editor of the Tribune said I had cloddish taste over an issue, and it's, so, but again, the taste issue for advertising comes up, and we don't have any oversight on that, do we?
Well, it is described in the contract of what is allowed. Of course, you can't have anything that's, you know, offensive.
So you have some control over something, you know, outrageous, yes, that would, yes, the community would, yes, react to.
Okay. If I remember, one was bite me or something like bite. That was, yes, so that was the one that got everybody upset.
Any other questions?
Well, I asked to have this removed from the consent agenda because I'm new to this discussion, and I wasn't sure how we arrived at an agreement to allow the buses to be wrapped completely in the first place. And I was also interested in discussing whether or not a modified version of this proposal would be worth considering. For example, to allow the current agreement with not covering more than 50% of the windows to be in place for, say, a year, and then to explore other alternative sources for funding, maybe by continuing the advertising inside of the bus or modifying it so that it covers less of the bus, so that we can really market our transit system and move towards something that is consistent and recognizable all over the city. So not to eliminate what we're planning, but to modify it in some way so that we're not locked into this agreement for 5 more years when there may be other options out there.
I believe it says, Mr. Ruffin, in there that we can get out of this within 60 days' notice.
Okay.
And so if something that you want to change and they're not willing to change, we could always do away with it.
So there is an out clause.
And there's an out clause. But I will tell you that they were very accommodating when that came up about the full wraps. We couldn't do anything about the ones that were already on there, but any new ones, they worked with us to just limit it to 50%. So, okay, you know, they're not locked in like you think they would be. They want to make money, too, and they want to still continue to advertise on our buses. So.
Okay.
So I think we can work with them if something comes up in a year.
Any other questions before we ask to open it to the public hearing? Would anyone from the public like to speak? We'll go to council comments.
Well, I have a couple. I have a bit of a issue. I mean, an aesthetic issue with all this stuff. But I've swallowed my pride and decided that the $183,000 is probably worth the effort. We have to subsidize transit anyway, and we're always looking for dollars. Certainly, the 50% thing makes some sense. When I look at this and your suggestion that, or your assertion that these folks are willing to work with some of the stuff, we have an escape clause if we need to. But the thought occurred to me, and I would just throw this out here for the rest of the city council, and I don't want to tie anybody's hands, certainly not my own or the rest of the city council's, in terms of where some of these dollars ought to go. But if these are advertising dollars for the bus system, and we have a need, for example, for bus shelters, that recently we've talked about increasing bus shelters as a function of the CIP and so on. I think that's a great thing. Maybe some of these revenues ought to be dedicated to bus shelters. I don't, and that gets into the other question of whether we ought to wrap the bus shelters in advertising or to what extent or so on and so forth. But that might be a reasonable way to encourage people to appreciate what this is all about, if it would provide some tangible protection for them in terms of this transit system. So I don't, I just throw that out there for whatever it's worth. I mean, dollars are dollars, and the transit system is always in need of some of these dollars. And if we have to, you know, if we need more dollars, you have to get it either from the airport or roads. That's what the transportation sales tax is all about. So it's always a matter of shifting these balances. But maybe that would be a good message to send to the public, that some of these advertising dollars would pay for their shelters, just to throw that out there.
I'm going to vote for this. I don't like the ads on the buses. We have beautifully designed buses that really are, without the ads, are fairly iconic. But we do have to pay the bills, and we don't have the money to run the buses without this. We haven't gone to the point of having the AT&T City Hall yet, but you know, right. It's an evil, but at this point, necessary evil. I'd love to figure out a way to have unspoiled, clean buses with the current logo, but don't have it.
Maybe just black and gold advertising or something. I don't know.
Any other comments? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 9715, Mr. McDavid?
Yes.
Mr. Ruffin?
Yes.
Mr. Scala?
Yes.
Ms. Nauzer?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Introduction, first reading. Please read the bills.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Bills 13615, 13715, 13815, 13915, 14015, 14115, 14215, 14315, 14415, 14515, 14615, 14715, 14815, 14915, 15015, 15115, 15215, 15215, 15315, 15415, 15515, 15615, 15715, 15715, 15815, and 15915. First reading.
The first report is 6315, which is the annual budget for the new Business Loop Community Improvement District. You know, these districts are set up by the property owners who tax themselves and then tax their customers. And we actually have no authority over the budget.
That's true.
We do have authority in this CID, I believe, of appointing the board for the next year. Is that correct?
You can actually comment on their budget if you think there are things that need to be reflected with their budget. You can comment on it, but other than that, there is no...
But we do have some authority in this CID in terms of selection of the board the next
year.
That
is correct.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, if a CID, with the TDD, we don't really have any authority.
Correct.
But with this CID, if one would get out of line and do something crazy, we, as a governing body, could change the board the following year. It's informational. Does anybody have any comments?
Just a comment. When it comes to CIDs, I mean, generally speaking, I'm in favor of the idea. We used to have an SBD downtown. We did have budget control and so on. There was more control of that. We lost that control when the CID went public, and I think 18 votes, in fact, approved, you know, the fact that they were going to collect sales taxes, so they are relatively independent. I would like to, in terms of criticism, if I can offer some a constructive criticism. I mean, I made the case that we were having all these infrastructure exigencies. The beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I know the CID said that, you know, the funds that they had collected, which were in excess of what they thought they were going to collect, somewhere upwards of $500,000 to $600,000, were going to be used for aesthetic purposes. I think infrastructure, personally, is pretty aesthetic. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, right, if you have it. But they didn't quite see it that way. I mean, they see some other things that are more important. That's their prerogative. Obviously, they went to the folks and got this approved, and that is their right. But nonetheless, I thought I'd offer that just for the heck of it. So,
if there are no more comments, we'll move to 6415. The Office of Sustainability is coordinating a contest to encourage us to save energy. Ms. Pepple.
So this is just for informational only, or mainly. We are 6 months into a two-year contest for the Georgetown University Energy Prize. If you remember, we're one of 50 communities competing to save the most energy over these 2 years. And if we win, we could win $5 million. We're 6 months in. We've been doing everything we can with the free advertising we get with social media. And we haven't seen a big dip in our energy savings or any improvements. So what we're doing is the idea is this quick 30-day challenge. This became popular with, like, biking for 30 days or doing a 30-day plank challenge, which I have not done. And this idea that if we can get people to kind of share it on social media, maybe we'll get a bigger draw and get people excited about saving energy. So that's it.
Great. Any questions?
You can all sign up.
Interesting to see how it turns out.
I look forward to seeing you tweet at saving energy or saving energy to win.
Okay, we'll do that. I'll do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next report is 6515. I asked for a report on the Creasy Springs Road. I think all of us know the history, the tragic accident that occurred there recently. This is an information report that talks about the traffic volume on Creasy Springs Road, compares it to other roads in town. I think for council members that haven't had a chance to do this, I think it's worth taking a little drive out there. It's not very far, and I describe the road as kind of a country road, narrow two-lane country road with no shoulder, that has some straight stretches, which are deceiving, you know, and country roads with straight stretches that have abrupt turns in them, if you're not prepared, you know, can be catastrophic. Now, it's a 35-mile-an-hour road, and the bad corner has a sign with an arrow that says 20 miles an hour, and there are a string of arrows. I would describe that turn as approaching basically a ravine with a hill on the other side, and I'm sure it could be straightened, but it would be a substantial engineering feat. And you know, I know it's tragic, but we've got $192 million of street and sidewalk projects on our CIP that we are nowhere near having the money to fund. And that's basically what's hard about this job, and is that we have limited resources and a lot of needs. And I'm certainly willing to listen to ideas, but this is a real challenge to straighten this out.
Well, I'm guessing too that these accidents and these tragedies that happen are going at considerably more than 35 miles an hour down to a 20 mile an hour bottleneck. I mean, it's probably 40, 50 miles an hour, and then it's too late. So there is some responsibility here. Maybe it's our responsibility to the extent that we can make sure that people understand what you're just explaining. That is, there is a real danger out here, and traveling faster than 35 miles an hour is asking for trouble. But nonetheless,
I guess I would just ask the traffic engineers to evaluate the warning signs. I mean, they're there. They're not very big. They're small arrows. And, you know, a huge arrow at the end of that road, I don't know how much that would cost.
We're looking into that very thing, and sooner in the street than normal, and maybe dangerous curve ahead or something like that.
Yeah, but signage doesn't cost very much money, and a big sign might be that's not the only curve in the road, though. I mean, there are other curves on that road to go on further out, and if you drive that area just outside the city, the county roads in that area are even curvier, and so it's a kind of a quasi-hilly area with a lot of curvy blacktop roads. So this is not unique to that area, but so I think, you know, staff can come up with some suggestions, perhaps.
There may be even some kind of flashing yellow caution light with the arrow, so because at night there are no streetlights out there. And so I don't know if the accidents are primarily taking place in the evening hours after when it's dark or during the daytime where you can see those signs more easily. But I drive that road quite often, actually. And even I forget that big curve is coming up because you do tend to go fast along that straightaway.
The straightaway with a 90-degree turn.
And you get up to that 90-degree turn.
Yeah.
Has there been any thoughts about rumble strips or anything? And I mean, you know, other ways just besides the signs that remind people.
I think they can come up with something.
Staff informed me that they were waiting to get the final accident report, and then they were going to evaluate a number of countermeasures, including a lot of the ideas that all of you have suggested. So we can always bring a report down the road, too, and let you know what's been done. So
thank you.
Can I ask why we just looked at the last 2 years? From 2013 to 2015? I mean, isn't it more common to use a longer timeline?
That was the data that was given to me. I'm not exactly sure why the reason. I think mostly just because we were trying to give you a snapshot of what was going on now in the city relative to other places, you know, in relation to Creasy Springs. So
partly this road's not been in the city limits that long. So this might be our best information. I can double check that.
Thank you.
Report 6615 is an informational report about intra-departmental transfer of funds. Are there any questions about that? I'll yield. We'll go to the general comments section, so I'll yield 3 minutes to anybody from the public.
My name's Roger Fries. I live on Hedgewood Drive. And just sitting here this evening thinking, I go on Forum Boulevard all the time. I go on Greasy Springs maybe once every other month. And I think you'd be much better off spending that $14 million on Crazy Springs than on a problem that could simply be solved by the right-in, right-out turn from Wilson's onto Forum. I've gone Forum all times, different times of day. Very seldom have any problems except for an hour between 5 and 6. And I think there's other pressing needs like Crazy Springs that could use the money a lot better and more effectively than that. Thank you.
Thank you.
On to Welch, 2808 Greenbrier Drive. On behalf of People's Visioning and other organizations, just wanted to say thank you for any consideration you might be able to give tonight as you have your council discussion on the two presentations we made, one this time and meeting before last, about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And thank any of you have taken individual action. But we would like to encourage maybe a discussion of could we take action as a city and a community that would be joining other cities that have done this, Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, LA, New York, Pittsburgh. I know those are big coastal cities, but yet they are taking action with their elected officials, saying that they see how this Trans-Pacific Partnership would be detrimental to their communities. And so we can see from NAFTA jobs that have been moved out, and the investor-state dispute settlement that is being more aggressively used. So I would just like to ask for maybe some serious consideration. It is true that our renewable energy standard could already be, with NAFTA even, existing situations and other policies under challenge. So I would appreciate if you could maybe have a discussion on possible official action. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing none, we'll move to council comments. I'm going to start by, I know the a substantial number of the public came down to hear our cost of service analysis of solid waste. We got hung up in a closed session that we couldn't get out of, and so we will put this on the agenda next time. It will be the first thing we talk about at the next pre-council meeting. I applaud those who are interested in advocating against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I strongly feel this is not a local issue. This is an issue that divides. You know, it's the Obama administration is in favor of it for free trade purposes, environmental regulation, and human rights. It splits the Democratic Party. It splits the Republican Party. It's complicated. And I think its scale is substantially beyond anything that we're able to analyze locally. And so this fits into the category of national issues that we have little control over, and I think would dilute our focus from some very pressing local issues. Anyone else?
Yeah, I got a few things. Let me just follow up on that immediate issue. I guess I do not support the TPP personally. Do not support the TPP personally, and I don't have that same feeling. I don't believe that the mayor has that some of these things are not the kinds of things that we can't lend some credence to from the position that we have as duly elected officials. On the other hand, there has been a convention on the city council, except for those issues that directly affect the city, primarily estate, local issues, and so on. We tend to not to take these political positions. That, however, does not preclude any of us from taking an individual initiative as citizens and even announcing the fact that we are duly elected officials in either supporting or opposing the action that is being taken by our federal government. I really see this as there are really two issues here, not the least of which is the first issue is just the fast-track authority that the Obama administration wants to take. The other issue is the treaty itself. So, I mean, initially, I think it's probably prudent from my personal point of view to take some time to not allow fast track so that we can analyze this monumental treaty even further. But that's, like I said, that's not an issue typically that the city council takes because we tend to not take political positions. And so I just to make sure that the folks out there know what my own personal feelings are on this, I think it's probably prudent not for the city council to take this approach at any rate. So that's one issue. The other issue is there has been some discussion. It just came up with this CIP, the capital improvement project list, and one of the gentlemen came up and talked about Forum Boulevard. I think the city manager had it right at our last discussion when we were talking about the ballot language that is going forward in terms of the capital improvement project list. It is a list. It's a placeholder list. I think that was the term that you used, and I appreciate that term. That doesn't mean that some of the individual projects cannot further be scrutinized and negotiated in terms of the total scope and whatever. I think problems on Forum need to be addressed. Problems on Grindstone and its extension need to be addressed. The extent to which they're addressed don't necessarily mean $13 or $14 million or $12 million or however much it costs. I mean, that has yet to be resolved, and those issues have to come back to us for appropriations and so on. But certainly those are placeholders, and the ones that were mentioned are the ones that we certainly have, to that extent, have promised that we will address in some fashion or another. So I don't know what the final product is going to be on how much money we're going to spend on Forum or any of these other projects, Ballinger or any other project as far as that goes. As a matter of fact, on Ballinger, apparently MoDOT has decided to pave that road. So it probably has saved us some money in the overall cost of trying to put shoulders on that road. I don't know. At this point, it remains to be seen. But having said that, I just wanted to address that gentleman's issues when it came to the CIP. And then finally, one other issue, and that is I've had some discussions not only with some of the representatives from the DLC, Downtown Leadership Council, and others about, our perennial controversy, not perennial, but our controversy these days with CVS and that corner and the council's or the city's interest perhaps in some embellishments on Flat Branch Creek and those discussions and what CVS wants to do and when they want to do it and all the rest of this very complicated issue. I'm suggesting, and I'll throw this out there for the council to weigh in if they want to, that perhaps we ought to have some sort of a public information session along the lines of interested party meeting, if you will, because there seems to be some support for both sides of this, development in terms of CVS and going along with what they have in mind, and there seems to be some support in the community for enhancing the park and so on, and maybe taking a look at this from a community perspective. I think that discussion, before we get into any of the details about leasing and the property values and any rest of this, which would necessitate a closed session, ought to be an open session, and it ought to be available to the public to talk about what we, to this point, have kind of collected as anecdotal evidence of people wanting to do this or wanting to do that. It's just a matter of sampling, and I think we ought to offer that to the public in order to have a discussion as to what the folks really want to do with this corner. Do they want to see this developed? There are some business interests, certainly in this community, that do. Or do they want to enhance the park, for example, and have the city weigh in on behalf of the community? I think that's a reasonable discussion, And I would request that we at least put some feelers out there to find out whether there is public a public appetite for having that discussion. I expect we would find that there is, and I would recommend that we do so.
I just have one thing, and then that'll be regarding, I just want to kind of clarify some of the issues that we're hearing in the newspaper regarding Forum Boulevard. It's being framed in the media and with others that this is a fix for Forum or for Wilson's Fitness. It goes beyond the fix for Wilson's Fitness. But there's only 5 crossings of the Hinkson Creek in our community, and when one of those bridges goes out, it certainly creates a bottleneck in our traffic patterns. The biggest issue with the Forum Boulevard is the aging bridge. If that bridge is not replaced now, it could be up to 20 more years before that bridge is fixed. And as it ages, just like the aging infrastructure in the state of Missouri with many of our bridges, it becomes a safety issue. And so we have a roadway that goes from 4 lanes to 2 lanes to 4 lanes. And there was just, I believe it was last year, there was a fatality accident as well on Forum Boulevard. So there are 15,000 car counts a day going on Forum. And with the increase in the Fifth Ward, that traffic count is only going to continue to increase, and so traffic will continue to increase, putting more structural pressures on that bridge, which is aging. And so that is one of the primary concerns of looking at that Forum Boulevard project, is because of the bridge, not the access into and out of Wilson's Fitness Center, as has been framed in many newspaper articles and by others within the community. So we're willing to look at this as an entire picture, not just as a solution to one traffic congestion problem. And so, as Mr. Scala said, you know, all these are placeholders and will certainly be vetted through the formal public process of interested party meetings and the appropriate public hearings. And so I would encourage anyone who has these concerns and would like to express their opinions to, as well, to come to those issues or meetings in the future. So that's all I have today.
Mayor, if I might interrupt, I just want to introduce a new face at the meeting tonight. You may have noticed someone next to Leah Christian is Megan Allen. She will replace Leland as a fellow. So welcome, Megan.
Good evening.
Welcome.
Don't get used to the length of this meeting, though.
No, this is a rarity.
It's an enigma.
Where'd Leland go? Well, he's...